Reporting on politics and public policy is supported by the Center for Western Studies at Augustana University.
The 2019 legislative session has ended. Joining us for a look back at what happened this session are SDPB's Jackie Hendry and Lee Strubinger. Jackie is here with me in the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. Jackie, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
Lee Strubinger joins us from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital Studio in Rapid City.
Hey, Lori, how's it going?
Pretty good. Jackie, good. Let's start with you. Maybe the biggest news coming out of the session is the budget and what it does for nursing homes. What does the budget mean for Medicaid?
Well, lawmakers really far surpassed some of the earlier suggestions for nursing homes with ultimately a 10% ongoing increase to Medicaid reimbursement. So to put that in some perspective, Governor Noem originally suggested what would have equaled about a $4 million ongoing addition to Medicaid reimbursement rates. Other bills this session called for an $8 million one-time boost. This budget adjustment means about $18 million ongoing in hopes of alleviating some of the pressures that we've been seeing with the underfunded nursing home situation.
Some of the pressures. Is it enough?
There's still a wide gap between reimbursement rates and actual cost, depending on who you ask. That ranges from a $38 million statewide loss a year to up to $66 million statewide. So $18 million, it helps. It doesn't close the gap. But Lauren Diekman is president and CEO of Jenkins Living Center in Watertown. He tells me they have about a 57% of their residents are paying through Medicaid, and that for his facility equals about a $1.3 million loss annually. But this budget adjustment, Diekman says, is going to be really huge.
It's going to allow us to give some much-needed wage increases to our staff, and we've tried to give raises every year, wage increases, but they've been pretty minimal. They haven't kept up with what's going on in the job market, so it's going to help us be more competitive now again in the labor force as we compete for that pool of employees that everybody else is going after as well. And it also helps us to upgrade our facilities. This is the home for our residents, and we want it to be appealing. We're not creating any Taj Mahals out here, but we just want it to be appealing and nice and just a great home-like environment for them. So, this will help with some physical plant upgrades as well.
So those are some of the ways that some facilities are likely to be using that boost in dollars. Lawmakers also made some adjustments to make sure that rate increase goes into effect on April 1st.
All right, Lee, where does that money come from then?
Well, during her budget address at the beginning of session, Governor Noem indicated that the Department of Social Services is seeing lower utilization rates. And yesterday during a press conference, she said those dollars returned to the general fund and they used them to address this provider rates issue. And Noem says she was also thrilled the legislature supported her $6 million in innovation grants. She says those grants will drive new types of health care and elderly care in the state.
We have a lot of families that are requesting home health care services to be reimbursed by Medicaid. They're requesting to have higher level skilled care in assisted living facilities. And so we have been focused as an administration on what we can do to make that happen as far as a regulatory process. But the fact that now we have these innovation grants that we can partner with providers to offer new types of services will help drive the industry to be much more efficient and also deliver the kind of care that families would like to see.
All right, Lee, another issue that got much attention this session was a bipartisan bill that legalized and established industrial hemp production in South Dakota. There was a lot of back and forth between the legislative and executive branches on this issue. Ultimately, Kristi Noem vetoed it. What happened there?
So this bill is one of those annual issues that comes up, and I think a lot of supporters were really excited about this now that the 2018 Farm Bill sort of gave states that opportunity to go ahead with a industrial hemp production program. And, this time the legislature indicated that they did want this program. The bill passed out of the House overwhelmingly several times. Sometimes they would occur with the first time it was to pass the bill, the second time was to concur with some amendments, and then even to override the governor's veto. So the House really wanted this bill, even after the governor indicated her concerns with this legislation. The Senate is ultimately where the bill stalled. The Noem administration came out in full force against this bill, pointing to concerns about transportation of the plant across the state. Hemp looking very similar to marijuana. They are cousins of each other, a part of the cannabis plant family. Lack of USDA rules and that FDA approval of CBD oil, those were things that weren't there that Noam really wanted before she could support this hemp program. The bill was sponsored by Democratic Representative Orrin Lesmeister. And when the Senate failed to override the governor's veto, here's what he had to say.
These problems are going to be here, whether it's transportation issues, whether it's the bad people that want to try to sneak one in, whether it's the CBD oil issue, what have you. Now the other issue that we're probably going to have to deal with that won't be here is industry. You know, that was always the issue before. Well, we have nowhere to take it. This time we had somewhere to take it. And this time the United States Congress had made it legal to do this. Now if industry leaves, we're right back to square one. That's why I just at this moment, I don't know if South Dakota will ever have industrialized hemp.
You can kind of hear his frustration there. And he made it, Lesmeister has made it known very publicly that he doesn't plan on sponsoring an industrial hemp legalization bill next year. And I talked with the prime sponsor on the Senate side, Republican Jordan Youngberg, about it too. And he says he'll have to wait and see. He says he'd like to bring other bills to the legislature next year, and that sponsoring a hemp bill really becomes a full-time job.
So, Lee, my understanding is, though, if other states have legalized industrial hemp production, that they can still transport it through South Dakota, can't they?
Yeah. As I understand it, interstate commerce still is one of those things that applies to this. So it kind of remains to be seen how the Department of Public Safety will respond to some of our neighboring states having this plant and producing it. And also at the same time, several of the state's tribes have indicated that they plan on going forward with growing industrial hemp. So regardless of what happened here, the state will likely have to respond to it in some way.
Hmm. All right. So part of the conversation around Governor Noam's veto of that legislation had to do with the challenges that she felt it would create for law enforcement. And she had those concerns about them knowing the difference between the hemp plant and the marijuana plant, not having the proper testing equipment. But law enforcement officers across the state also talked about some concern they had regarding a bill that stripped the permit requirement for carrying a concealed pistol. As she said, how she's weighing those two law enforcement concerns against each other.
I asked her that, and Noam says that they are two separate issues. She says that implementing a hemp program would cost the state millions of dollars a year, and the Bureau of Finance and Management, which falls under her direction as part of the executive branch, came out with a cost estimate that says it would cost around $3 million the first year to enforce an industrial hemp program, and roughly $2 million ongoing after that. And she says that would pull resources away from meth prevention programs and the nursing homes that we talked about earlier.
It opens the door to more opportunities for there to be confusion and costs and ramifications down the road. So when it comes to concealed carry, they had concerns, but obviously that's a Second Amendment right that they indicated that they could handle. They were concerned, but the permit program, I think it's important to note, is something that still stands. It's still in force in South Dakota. It will still be there in order to receive reciprocity from other states. People will still need to get a permit.
And proponents of industrial hemp say the cost for surrounding states is much less. Some states are their program costs around $150,000 a year. The AP reported that when they asked the Montana Highway Patrol if they've experienced people transporting marijuana disguised as hemp, the law enforcement, any kind of law enforcement confusion or drug dog mistakes of hemp for marijuana, they said the Highway Patrol hasn't come across any of those issues as of yet.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. We're doing a little legislative recap with political reporter Lee Strubinger and healthcare and education reporter Jackie Hendry. I want to bring Jackie back into the conversation. So in Governor Noem's State of the State address, there was that moment we all remember where she called for increasing civics education and a test, a citizenship test in order to graduate from high school. She got a rousing standing ovation at that moment, Jackie. But the bills that followed that moment seemed to have a lot of political capital, but then they failed to pass. So what happened to requiring high schoolers to take that U.S. citizenship exam?
Well, that particular bill ran through several amendments. So 50 out of 100 questions from the test then eventually whittles down to 10 questions from the U.S. citizenship test. And the most common opposition to that idea being, you know, rote memorization of facts does not equal a more engaged citizen. Then later, some other amendments removed passage of the test as a graduation requirement, and then even exempted homeschool students from taking the test. And so at this point, that was opposed by some school administration groups and even some lawmakers who said, listen, if our whole excitement about this is improving civic engagement for all of our students in South Dakota, it really doesn't do us much good to exempt homeschoolers from that. But without any of those requirements, the bill ultimately failed in the Senate by a 13-21 vote.
All right, so back to that argument about the test requirement, whether or not it's actually going to achieve that civic knowledge and engagement. Mm-hmm. Were there any efforts or conversations to get at that nugget there?
Yes, there was one other bill that also failed after, again, some major amendments from its original form. It began as a requirement for an additional half credit of civics education in order to graduate from high school. Opposition argued this was beyond the legislature's purview. That should be, any requirements to that end should be left up to the State Board of Education standards. And again, that same argument that you can teach someone as much as you want, it's not necessarily going to equal civic engagement once they're out of high school. But after some discussion with the State Department of Education, the bill was hoghoused to, instead of that half credit of civics education, call for just a survey, kind of the state of civics education in South Dakota, collect some of that diagnostic data almost. Representative Fred Deutsch addressed the House last week, hoping to remind the body of that enthusiasm we started with at the beginning of session.
You know, we all got excited as a body about helping our students better learn civics, but we didn't really have the data. And that was what came of this negotiation.
But then the roadblock for this version of the bill is the idea that the Department of Education doesn't need the force of statute in order to collect information on these matters. So that bill also ultimately failed in the House on a slightly slimmer margin, 30-33.
Right, another education bill that didn't survive the session called for a creation of an early learning advisory council. This is the great preschool debate, and it's not the first time that measure has failed. Tell us more.
Right, so this was also a priority for Democratic Senator Billy Sutton last year. This year, Democratic Representative Aaron Healey was the prime sponsor to create the Early Learning Advisory Council. So South Dakota is one of just two states without an early learning advisory council that collects data, statewide data on resources for children from about birth to age 5. Opposition to this idea is based mostly on funding concerns and, frankly, concerns about government involvement in early childhood education reaching beyond. But despite continued opposition, Representative Healey says she plans to bring this issue up again next year.
I think it's incredibly important that we keep pushing for early childhood education. Our state needs to focus on that, and we need to make sure that we have some funds going to it, because we are jeopardizing our Head Start program by not having an early learning advisory council, and we're also jeopardizing federal funds that could be coming into this state that we are losing out on because we don't have this council.
Now, Head Start is that federal program that provides services to young children and often low-income families. So that, despite that limited support here in the state, it's not likely that this is the last we hear of this issue.
So, Jackie, South Dakota has a high percentage of working women, mm-hmm. and preschool is certainly one of those issues that impacts women working and cuts into their salary if they are working to pay for the cost of preschool disproportionately to men statistically. Has there been any, I have not heard anyone talk about that as a women's issue. Really, I've heard it talked about as a workforce development issue or as a basic education issue, as a federal funding issue. Have you overheard anybody talking about this as an issue for working women in the state?
Not directly. During some of the committee hearings, I remember one opponent testimony was, I don't remember the exact group, but basically a mother's group, talking about how we don't need the government to take our children away from us, almost that kind of idea. But I haven't necessarily heard about it in that context. So it'll be interesting to see if that's a way that we kind of bring back that demonstration next year. I believe Aaron Healy talked a little bit about how when they bring it back next year, they do need to hear from more kind of the parents and talking about why this is useful ultimately for the family unit rather than detracting from that.
Right. So special education funding was a continuing topic in the session. What came of last summer's interim study on that?
So last summer's interim study focused on the extraordinary cost fund, which funds a lot of these needs for school districts if they meet certain requirements and apply to that. But Senator Jim Boland was part of that summer study and was one of the sponsors of multiple bills that came from that. And he says many are concerned just simply about the rising number of students with special needs in the state.
I think everybody agrees that we want to be able to fund special education at an appropriate level, and we want to avoid a situation where general education funds are diverted into special ed to meet federal mandates and federal guidelines.
And Boland says a lot of the issue is the federal government failing to keep up with their funding end of the bargain of requirements that they put into place. So this interim study is basically going to expand on a lot of issues of confusion that came out of last summer's study, where we're not understanding all of the requirements and overlapping things at play. And that bill started as a task force, but we've heard a lot of campaign issues opposed to task forces. So now this is just a summer study that with a clear beginning and end date, and we'll see what comes from that.
And in that same interview, I asked Senator Boland to describe this year's legislative session. Now, he's a history teacher, so he's apt to define these types of things. And this kind of speaks to that interim study issue that we just talked about. But Boland says the controversial issues this year, they all died during the legislative process, and there really wasn't any kind of overriding theme to this year's legislative session.
The legislature has maintained the status quo, with the exception of the gun bill issue. There were significant changes made in that area, but in many, many other areas, there wasn't a lot of changes. There were a lot of changes proposed, almost none of them passed.
And I think I recall several years ago, State Representative Larry Roden once saying, don't judge the legislature by the bills that get brought up, but judge us by what gets passed. And I think that kind of maybe speaks a little bit to this session. And I think part of that can be chalked up to, you know, we have a new administration coming in, a lot of new legislative leadership, and a lot of new lawmakers.
Right. Some of the controversial issues that we saw lawmakers wrestling with again had to do with transgender students in the state. Two of those being bills that Senator Jim Boland backed, which would require student athletes' birth certificates to be the determining factor on what sports team they would participate in. Those bills didn't pass. What does that say about this year's legislature?
I think most lawmakers would tell you that, the legislative process played out. The ACLU South Dakota came out against those bills, and I talked with Libby Screen, who's the government policy director there, and she says there's cause to celebrate the fact that those four anti-transgender bills did not pass.
However, I think that we saw that there is still an appetite for this kind of legislation in Pierre. So the work doesn't end with the end of session, and I suspect that in some form or another we'll be having this discussion again next year. So I think we should celebrate that we're safe for now, but also be ready to do the work in the interim and to educate legislators who need to meet trans people and need to learn about what it means to be transgender. Because if we don't do that sort of critical work, then these issues are just going to keep coming up over and over and over again.
All right, Lee, looking forward, what issues do you sort of project into the future? What are we going to be talking about in the upcoming months?
Well, as you may know, on this show, we spent a lot of time talking about the Partridge Amendment and the state's sales tax rate. The debate on those issues reached a stalemate this year, largely because both chambers disagreed on really how that should work. They didn't need to act this session, but next session, the legislature will likely have to put something in place. The Partridge Amendment, real quick, was something placed onto the Blue Ribbon Task Force tax increase bills, which raised money for teacher pay and property tax relief. It says for every $20 million in online sales tax revenue generated, the state sales tax will scale back. One thing that will sort of come into play next session is this memo from the Bureau on Finance and Management that came out this last summer, which says lawmakers will have to deal with an estimated $12 to $15 million in lost revenue next session for fiscal year 2021. And that's because the state will no longer be able to enforce its internet access tax. So South Dakota is one of seven states that still assesses a sales tax on internet access. And the federal government says states can no longer enforce that tax by June of 2020. Hmm.
Jackie Hendry, any final thoughts on what's ahead in the world of education, for example?
Well, like we said, in education, we're probably going to see early education return yet again next year, likely going to see more attention to special education resources and funding. And then as far as healthcare is concerned, a lot of parents testified this year about losing insurance coverage for ABA therapy, which is a really intense and often very effective treatment for young kids with autism. Many people lost coverage. A bill to kind of close that loophole failed this session. And I think I would not be surprised to see that return again next year. Right.
Advocates said they were working on it from an executive branch standpoint as well. So we might see something before the legislative session.
Indeed.
SDPB's Jackie Hendry and Lee Strubinger, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Larry.
It's a pleasure.